Hello and welcome to episode 51 of the Clippings podcast, where we review nail papers and share them with you. I'm April Schachtel and I'm joined by my co-host.
Jasmine Rana.
I am so thrilled to introduce our special guest, Dr. Matilda Yuritso. Matilda is a dermatologist with an interest in hair and nail disorders. She practices in Switzerland and has published over 150 papers and book chapters. She speaks regularly at the AAD, CND, and European Nail Society meetings, and we are so delighted to speak with her today. Thank you for being here, Matilda.
Thank you so much for inviting me. It's an honor and a pleasure.
Oh, thank you. Well, our plan today is to briefly review and then discuss two of Matilda's recent important papers about JAK inhibitors and nail disease. One is a systematic review summarizing the available data that we have for the use of JAK inhibitors in various nail diseases. And the other is a case series specifically on the use of topical tofacitinib cream for nail lichen planus. The titles are JAK inhibitors and inflammatory nail disorders, a systematic review of clinical outcomes and therapeutic potential, published this month in July 2025 in the American Journal of Clinical Dermatology. And the other paper is efficacy of topical tofacitinib 2% cream in the treatment of nail lichen planus in press in the Indian Journal of Dermatology, Venereology, and Leprology. So, since these are related and overlapping topics, we thought we would discuss them both together with a specific focus on how to practically use topical tofacitinib for nail lichen planus.
Perfect. So yeah, maybe we'll just jump right into it. So I enjoyed both of these papers. They were so well written and really such a joy to read. And the systematic review in particular, I think, did a really great job summarizing both topical and oral JAK inhibitors for nail diseases. And just for our readers, it kind of noted that most of these JAK inhibitors are off-label for nail disorders. And then Matilde, I found it really interesting that topical tofacitinib, which is a pan-JAK inhibitor, is the most studied topical agent for nail disease, but it does not currently have any FDA-approved indications in the US, at least topically. On the other hand, topical ruxolitinib, which is FDA-approved for vitiligo and atopic dermatitis, has no data to date for inflammatory nail disease. So I was just curious why you think this is and kind of what your takeaway from your systematic review was in terms of where these JAK inhibitors hold the most promise for nail disease.
Thank you for the question. The systematic review was really a hard job for two main reasons. Not all, but most, the majority of studies were not really comparable to each other, and so it was difficult to understand if they were really successful. And in the process of collecting papers, more and more paper came out. So at certain point, we decided, okay, we have to stop the search because every day there was a new paper. To answer your question about topical tofacitinib, I really do not have an answer on why it's not marketed. I mean, it's marketed in India. I don't know if you know that. And it's very cheap product compared to the cost that we have. I for sure in Europe, I don't know the cost in the US, but I can assume they are very high. So it's very, very funny to me to have the same product that is totally different prices. Regarding Europe, I have no idea. We have now a pan-JAK that is comparable, that is delgocitinib. It's marketed from hand eczema, so it's still a pan-JAK as tofacitinib. What changes, of course, is the vehicle. And I think talking and thinking about ruxolitinib, so ruxolitinib is brand new in Switzerland, so I never had the chance to use it, and I think it's difficult to use it for lichen planus because it's marketed for vitiligo, and so I cannot really justify its use. And the pharma industry, I think, is not interested in testing it other diseases, and patients do not buy it. It's too expensive. So that's another difference, I think, that why tofacitinib is the mostly used, because at the end of the day is the less expensive. So compared to Ruxo and delgocitinib, it's less expensive. So if patient has to pay, of course, it's more convenient. And second, the idea that I have is that the active principle is important, but the vehicle is also super important because the tofacitinib that we have here, it's not a formula that I invented. It's a formula that is have been provided by our labs. It's not really greasy, so people can use it because you know that you have to use it twice a day and you don't have to wash your hands for at least 2 to 3 hours. So you cannot stay with sticky fingers for 2 hours. People needs to, use the hands. Delgocitinib, in comparison, it's even less hydrating. I don't know how to say. It's a different composition. So what patients say is that they have the feeling that they use it and they stay less in place. I tried. It's a very nice cream, really very nice cream because it is thought to be applied on the hand, but I really want to, it's also brand news for us. I really want to test the difference between the two because the vehicle for sure is different. So I don't know if it should be equally, it should be equally effective because it's also a pen jack. So my next goal is to compare them.
Wow,
Because
that's really
yes, we
exciting.
have to. I think the when we think about topical treatment for everything, not only for nails, but for skin, the vehicle is the thing. Okay, if you have a wrong way vehicle, it may not work. So I think it's nice to work on the vehicle, and I also curious because if you think about delgocitinib and tofacitinib on the scalp. If you think about the thickness from outside the scalp through the hair follicle, is not so different from the periungual area, and most of the time is also cicatricial because the advantage that we have with nails is to prevent the cicatricial. But when we see patient with frontofibrosing alopecia and lichen planopilaris, they come to you most of the time that they are already in a cicatricial phase, and it works. So
Wow.
that's why sometimes I think, why? What's the difference between the scalp and the periungual tissue? Because in nails works, but not in every situation. In the scalp, it most of the time it works. So it like it's decreased the inflammatory infiltrate. So the patient is as a erythema when it comes, and no more erythema after, 3 months. So it's much more impressive, but I don't know why.
Wow, that's so interesting. And for our listeners, the delgocitinib is not currently approved in the FDA or in the US by the FDA, but I think they're in the process of trying to approve that. So that will be really neat for us to try in clinic because I know we don't have that available. So yeah,
No,
that's
but
such
it,
a
when you will have it, ask maybe not necessarily, I mean, for a sample or for a placebo, like test the vehicle, because I think it's a very nice product to apply. So they thought about, a really good vehicle, but of course they thought about a different disease.
Right, of course. And I love the thought process of making an analogy to the scalp because the hair and the nails are so similar in that regard. So that's really, really interesting to think about.
So, speaking of topicals, the results in your case series about the tofacitinib for nail lichen planus were really impressive, especially considering that all of these patients had gotten some intramatricial steroid injections but had not fully responded. So, how does this new topical tofacitinib fit into your treatment algorithm for nail lichen planus? Like, if you see a new patient, are you combining it with intralesional treatments or just going straight there? How do you counsel a patient on that?
So I think that intralesional steroid injection, so triamcinolone, are still remain the first line treatment for many reasons. You control the disease because the patient come to your practice, so you are sure that you do the treatment and the patient come to do the treatment and there are no mistakes at all. Second, the cost. It's so I mean, it costs nothing, so very convenient for everyone. The point is that some patients refuse them, or maybe they do it the first time because you are able to convince them, but then they don't want to do it anymore, and they don't come, they don't show up at follow-up, or they say, I don't want to do it anymore, so give me something different. And I have to admit, so in these cases, it's a good option. So first line, imagine you don't have to speak about cost, okay? Everything is available. To me, is a first line if the patient refuse. To me, it should be a first line, full stop. But thinking about cost and efficacy, intralesional steroids are and remain for me the first line treatment. Some patients accept to pay, others, of course, not. But when they pay, they are happy. They are skeptical at the beginning, but then it's nice for them because they don't have to come to practice. They do it at home. There is no side effect, and so I ask them to come at follow up. But sometimes it happens that they are abroad, they cannot come, so they send me the pictures and say cannot come, but I'm like this today, so can we move the consultation next month? And I'm okay, you know, it's not clobetasol. And so I say, okay, no problem. I can see the improvement. Regarding the degree of nail-like implanus, to me is mild to moderate. So if you have anonychia or micronychia, no way. But I had a case that I presented at the AAD with a patient with a very severe lichen planus and micronychia, and I started upadacitinib, thinking about that lichen planus is a JAK1 disease. There was not enough improvement to tolerate the upadacitinib, but I asked to the patient in two fingers of the non-dominant hand, so the fourth and the fifth finger, the one that are not used, so no Koebner phenomenon, to apply tofacitinib cream, and they improved. Not they were not nails, okay, so they were still micronychia, but the patient says they are, you know, that enough to be okay, because you know that if you don't have nails, it's not easy to work with hands. So they were, the size was enough to him, and the plate was hard enough. And he say, I'm like, you know, a patient with onychotillomania, okay, very small nail because you bite them. And so he decided to keep going with the cream. So for me, I understand that lichen planus is a JAK1 disease, but the pan-JAKs for severe cases are better than the selective ones.
That's really helpful. So just as a takeaway, the mild to moderate disease seem to respond best to the topical tofacitinib. That's really good to know. And, you know, I think I was just reflecting when you were talking about this, and then the vehicle, it kind of reminds me of that story, at least in the States, about efinaconazole compared to the other topical antifungals, how vehicle is so important. And it is something that I think I reflect on a lot. And curious, kind of in thinking about that, how can you kind of just counsel us like we were your patients? How do you counsel the patient to use the vehicle, like in terms of occlusion, no occlusion? And can you just kind of walk us through how you would counsel your patients?
Occlusion, I tried at the beginning because you know you have to apply twice a day. So I asked to avoid them to apply it in the morning. I asked to apply it only overnight under occlusion, but it was no a mess. So they say, okay, the first month they were very diligent and then say, no way. And so twice a day for 2 hours, they don't have to wash their hands. I think they can do that. Of course, they go out, they touch, but we are not anymore, in the COVID era where we cannot touch anything. So I think that 2 hours is feasible. They can, and it's not sticky, it's not greasy. So it's like to put a hand cream. Okay, so it's greasy and sticky at the very beginning, but then it fades the greasiness. It's not an ointment, so it's a cream.
Yeah, that's helpful. And I don't know about both of you, but I always struggle about whether or not to tell patients to eat right after applying these creams. I try to say like, maybe do it after you're brushing your teeth or wait a couple hours to eat, because I always worry about like the systemic absorption. But I found it really interesting in your case series that you even checked systemic labs to kind of make sure that, there's not any side effect from the medication. And so that was
No, because it
reassuring.
was for the first. Okay, I am that kind of person that I'm not always happy with treatment. Okay, so I want to have an improvement. Otherwise, I'm not very happy. And at the beginning, so years ago, when for lichen planus, basically we had nothing. It was so impressive that I say maybe the vehicle is so potent that it has systemic absorption. So since it's a compound, I have no background from a pharma industry. I wanted to avoid saying to my patient, oh, it's just a topical, so you can use it. And then, the like cholesterol parameters increased like hell, or other problems. That's what I wanted to avoid, but I don't do it anymore.
I wonder if that's the same thing when you use it on the scalp, because I'm sort of thinking about maybe you're getting absorption a lot more up there compared to the nail unit.
Probably, but at the end, in Switzerland, usually patients once a year they go to their family doctor to do a full bloody checkup. So I just tell them, do that. So be sure to go there. But nothing happened till now.
Good, good. Maybe this is too specific a question, but there's kind of this push, at least locally in my area, about being really specific about amounts of topical products. And there's some complicated things going on with insurance. But if a patient is doing twice a day nail plate and skin around, do they go through something like 30 gram tube in a month or more
It's
than
we
that?
do 50 grams,
50.
50 grams, and it lasts 1 month, 1 month and a half.
Okay, that's great to
We can,
know.
I think they cannot do smaller, but they cannot do bigger for expiration date, like things like that. They
Yeah,
cannot
with the
do,
compounded.
yes.
What is the shelf life typically of the compounded cream that you use?
I think 3 to 6 months, if I remember
Great.
correctly.
Yeah, wonderful. And I think one of the other questions that we had was just, we may not have too much time to talk about this, but you've used it in the nail lichen planus. Have you used it as well for nail psoriasis as well?
To tell the truth, no. So I published a paper with Brazilian colleague with the compound made in the US. And that's why at the time, I realized I was also able to do it here in Switzerland. Similar, it's not the same, but I never use it in psoriasis because I think that in psoriasis, we have so many others effective product that I have no need to prescribe tofacitinib at least till now. Okay.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. And I know it seems like every year there's a new topical being approved for psoriasis, at least in the States. So more to learn about that
Do
too,
you
but
have roflumilast? They approved it? Yes.
yeah.
Yeah.
And I think April and I should do another podcast about that because I think there was a paper recently published on that. But yeah, it's really interesting. And I think historically, as you note, there are a lot of great treatments for nail
Yes,
psoriasis.
true.
Yeah, and then moving on, you kind of alluded to this earlier that most of the data in the systematic review is case level data and post hoc analysis of larger clinical trials where nail disease was a secondary outcome. And then one of the things that struck me was that it really took not very long for some of these patients to get better. And so even in your case series, the topical tofacitinib, some patients improved in as little as 3 months. And then in some of the other studies you cited in your systematic review, even less than 3 months. So I found this a bit surprising given that nails take 4 to 6 months to grow, and was just curious your thoughts on that and why you think that's the
I
case.
was surprised too. So basically, first I asked to my patients to be very, very strict. So I was super rigid with trauma because I said, okay, you are buying a product that costs a lot of money. So please, I want to be sure that if it works. So I asked them to avoid basically most of the everyday trauma, including I instruct them how to trim their nails just to be sure. I have no idea, but usually the cases that I have, if you take a look at the picture, were mainly a proximal matrix, a superficial plate and proximal matrix. So maybe, but this could be really a very big bullshit because I have no idea. It's proximal matrix, maybe it's closer to the periungual area. So, but don't take it for granted because I don't know. That's another problem that we have with nails. I cannot do multiple biopsies and check this. But this is my idea, seeing that severe cases where, the full thickness of plate, so full thickness of matrix was affected, they were really, really longer and even without any replies, any response. So that's the,
Yeah.
idea.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And I also wonder too, like maybe the nail speed might be affected, like the nail growth, maybe potentially.
Probably,
Yeah.
but I have no proof of that.
Yeah,
Right.
fair enough.
What could be you can maybe prove it if a patient has no 10 nails affected. So maybe you ask to apply just in few nails and you check the growth of the other nails not treated. That could be a good idea. Yes, maybe. Why not? It could happen. Something
Yeah.
like that.
Yeah. Interesting secondary endpoint for your next topical study.
Yes. But I have
Okay.
so many ideas
Yeah.
I not implement, so we'll see. I hope that someone listening to me and is able to do it. I don't care if not me, okay?
In terms of nail lichen planus, historically I'd been taught to often biopsy these patients early on. Like if we're gonna do acitretin or some long and kind of slow treatment that, you really want to know what you have before starting because the treatments have side effects. But now with this and being, essentially no side effects, I was curious how you decide when to biopsy your patients. That's changed that at all.
I biopsy them most of the time. I rarely, almost never biopsy a child or a teenager, or when it's very obvious that it's a lichen planus. But in mild diseases, sometimes since the nail is split, patients, have a kind of onychotillomania, but it's not really an onychotillomania because they are bothered by the splits of the plate. So there are some bloods in and there. I want to be sure it's not an onychotillomania or new onset older patients. I have to rule out maybe other diseases. But sometimes patients say, is it changing something? So basically, if you biopsy me, what changed for me? I will end up with a dystrophy. But sometimes there are patients, they want to be sure that I am right. You know, they don't care if I have experience. They want to be really sure they have that disease. They don't take drugs for nothing. But most of the time, yes, I do biopsy. Yes.
I also think to your point that both of your points that, I find biopsy helpful not just for the diagnosis, but for prognosis too. And I think that sometimes it's an area that I think is under-researched, but, even if we can't help our patients to the full degree, being able to say, like, this is the diagnosis and this is the natural history. Like, I can tell you kind of what this is going to look like for the next couple of years. And I think the knowledge of what it is and isn't can really be comforting for patients, many of whom have seen two or three or four other, doctors or dermatologists before coming to us. So, yeah, I think I'll keep biopsying too.
Yes, that's why I have not this opportunity where I work. So patient has to move in another hospital, but it should be very interesting to do the nanostring. So when you do the biopsy, you process to analyze the inflammatory infiltrate. Because imagine that a patient come to you, you are the 10th, the 20th doctor that they visit, and they have maybe some areas with pterygium, some anonychia. Maybe there is no more inflammatory infiltrate active, so you are going aggressive with treatment, but there is no result. And sometimes you say see, in the past, we used to say to patients, I'm sorry, the disease is difficult, you didn't respond to treatment. But if you can do that, you know in advance that there will be no response. So maybe you can tell to patient, okay, your disease is very old, there is no more active inflammatory infiltrate, it makes no sense to do a treatment. Then the patient can tell you, I want to try anyway. But you are clear since the beginning. But also to see if there is something different. So the nanostring has been done many times for hair, but never for nails. And maybe I have no idea of what to expect. Maybe the same thing, but maybe not. But it's difficult because I don't have the lab in my hospital. So patients are not very prone to go to another place. They have to go to Lausanne. It's not far away, but it's another city, and sometimes they don't want to go. But if you have enough,
Nanostring is they are like sequencing the inflammatory
yes,
infiltrate. I
yes,
haven't done this
yes,
before.
exactly, exactly, exactly. So
Yeah,
you can
you'll have to
see
keep us.
lichen planus, you can see psoriasis, lupus, atopic dermatitis, and something else, maybe. I'm not sure. Yes.
Wow. The company's actually based here in the Seattle area, I believe. It's so interesting.
I know, for instance, in Miami, they have the lab. So maybe if you ask, you also have I don't know about the cost. Because that's another problem. But here with the insurance, since the disease is very rare with a scarring potential, you can justify this kind of biopsy. They accept it because they understand it's something difficult. But in Switzerland, they are more prone to accept diagnosis procedure than treatment. Okay. So when you have to diagnose, it's very rare that they say no.
Interesting. Yeah. It's
Yeah.
nice to be able to offer that to patients.
That's
Yes.
really interesting. Very cool. Yeah, no, I was just reflecting on that. It seems like it's an area that could benefit from a lot of further research because I would love to have something more definitive to tell patients about than just the histology. So that's really cool. So, do you have any other tips, Matilda, to share with our listeners to diagnose or treat nail lichen planus?
So to treat? No, I'm running out of ideas. But But what I used to do with my patients is that I always explain them they don't risk anything. So if they don't want to do any treatment, it's a nail dystrophy, that's it. But once and if the scarring process start, we are not able to revert. And it's not hair that you can cover at, you can even wear a wig. It, with the nails is not the same. So if they need to think about what I say during the consultation, it's okay, but they don't have to wait that much. And also, if there is a recurrence, because it could happen, they don't have to wait to come to my practice too much, because sometimes it could be too late. And it doesn't mean that an old treatment is still a valid treatment. So the patient of my paper, the case series, were, patients that I follow from many, many years. And at the beginning, they used to respond to intralesional steroids, to retinoids. So, but, at the end, maybe there is a switch in the inflammatory infiltrate. I don't know. They stopped responding. So they don't have to believe that they come and in 5 minutes, maybe with an intralesional injection, they are cured. Sometimes yes, but sometimes no. So they don't have to wait that much.
Thank you. Yeah, no, that's a really good point.
Well, this has been just really wonderful to hear from you. You're such an expert in nail lichen planus and other nail disorders. It's just been a treat to get to learn from you. And I'm so curious. I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about just how you got interested in nails to begin with, because you've achieved so much here, and it would be great for our listeners to hear a little bit about your path.
It's, I think, a funny and simple story. So I wanted to become a cardiologist first, cardiologist, okay? But my dad is a doctor, is a neuropsychiatrist. He told me that no, too hard, too much. So I wanted to he convinced me to do something in his mind, less tough than cardiology. So I moved to dermatology and in Bologna, because I am originally from Bologna. At that time, Antonella Tosti was there, and my cousin, that is also a dermatologist, suggested me to follow her because she was doing something unusual for the time, that it was 20 or more years ago. And she and I follow his advices, and she was so good in teaching, and she looked so expert to me that I was trapped in her teaching, and I was so happy. When I was happy to be a doctor, I mean, that's not a point, but I was happy to stay with her. And I remember I read a lot of journals, because at the time internet was not so big as now. We have no chat GPT, we have no PDF of papers. So I spent a lot of time in the library making copies of papers, and I read a lot, and I was more and more interested, and I never lost this passion even when I moved out of that department. I cannot imagine myself in doing anything different from what I'm doing, not even within my field. So I think I cannot start doing mole check all the day. No, I want to do hair and nails. So I do everything, but I'm more and more happy and engaged when I visit this kind of patients.
Can you talk a little bit, what does your day-to-day look like? So you said you do everything. Do you have a specific day where you're just seeing nail and hair, or do you interweave
No.
everything together?
No, I cannot. I tried, but it was difficult. And so I moved from hair to nail to mole check to vitiligo, prurigo, pemphigus, and keratosis, seborrheic, and acne. But I would love to, focus only on hair and nail, but I can't, because I have a lot of patients with any other condition. So I do everything every day.
Very
It's
cool.
confusing, but I'm okay.
I think April and I do the same. I think we both do a combination of a little bit of everything.
Yes.
Yeah.
But
Awesome.
I mean, it's okay because imagine that you visit a nail patient and you spot a mole or any other skin disease. I cannot say to my patient, it's not my topic, so go to someone else. What I do, if I feel there is a rare disease, I'm not expert enough, so I send patients to a colleague maybe that I know is more expert than me. But it also happens to me with my colleagues. They are not expert maybe in hair and nail. They prefer to send the patients to me. I think it's fair and nice.
Yeah, I think I even learned this. I think you phrased it this way at one of the talks that you gave, which is that like a lot of these nail diseases are just a component. Like, you know, it's not like nail psoriasis is a patient with nail psoriasis who also has psoriasis at other locations, right? And so being able to contextualize that, decide systemic, topical, joint, all these different considerations, like does require that, you know, strong understanding of general dermatology. So I
Yeah.
think that's really
What
cool.
is weird that if a patient has psoriasis in the skin or in the scalp and in the nails is managed by other colleagues because, you know, with biologicals, they do everything. But if they have isolated nail psoriasis, they send it to me. And I say, it's still psoriasis. So I have a lot of patients with isolated nail psoriasis because of this reason.
That's a good point. Awesome. I learned so much today. This was so
No,
amazing.
I can talk for hours, but I have to go, and I suppose you also.
Yeah. Well, I'll wrap up there. So, thank you both so much for joining me on this episode of Clippings. I want to thank our listeners for their attention. Please share this podcast with your colleagues and trainees and let us know how we're doing and which articles you'd like us to review on the show by contacting jerry.cnd at gmail.com or find us on Instagram at Nail Disorders. The goal of the Clippings podcast is educational and informational in intent and is not a substitute or resource for formal medical advice. Listeners should not delay formal medical care for any condition or medical question they have. The views are solely those of the discussants, and use of any content is at the user's own risk.